This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
You're recording me now during my intro talk, aren't you? Just so I say something stupid and you can use it in the intro?
Yeah?
Yeah.
And Chad P.
Chad looked at me and said, can we get out of the 70s and 80s, old man? And
I did not call you an old man. I called you an old fart.
Class is in.
School's out for summer, but we're in here at Rock School. My name is Joe Burns, and for the next 2 months, I'm not a professor in the communication department. I'm in charge of doing things around the house because my wife has tacked up a giant honey-do list on the refrigerator. You see, when I'm out of class, she believes a servant has been born. This kid sitting next to me is not out of class. He has to keep working, so I'm going to giggle while he says his name. Go right ahead. What's your name there?
Envious P.
Envious P. Don't be such a drip. Hey, you buy a CD, you take it home, you turn it over, and there's the name of the band.
Right.
And a couple other names. Engineer. Engineer. That makes sense. He or she probably pushed the buttons and all that. Yeah, okay. And then producer. Producer. What is a producer? Chad's the producer of the show.
I am. I produce Rock School.
That's right. You keep me on time track. You make sure that it's time to do breaks.
Yeah.
You basically help me pick the music to keep a flow going.
Well, I edit the show.
You edit the show.
Piece it together and make sure that it's 60 minutes on the dot for our affiliates. So, yeah.
So, you do a lot of post-production and such. You also make sure that the show has a certain sound to it.
Yeah.
It has a sonic feel. Well, that's what a music producer does. If you hire a producer, you're generally hiring a producer because he or she can bring a certain sound to your band. Many times a band, say Metallica, will say, I want that guy. Rick Rubin did their last album, Death Magnetic, because they wanted a certain sound.
Okay.
Another band will come along and say, well, I want that guy or I want that woman over there because we need to reshape our sound or we need to change this or we need to change that. Also, music companies will have like a problem band. Metallica, again.
Yeah.
And they'll bring in somebody and they'll say, this guy is a real taskmaster. And they'll put him in a room with Metallica, and this guy will crack the whip, and they'll say, look, we have this much money and this much time. Finish the album. And after a while, okay, we'll finish the album.
Okay.
So a producer has many different hats, and over the next hour, we're going to talk about what the producer does and how these producers create sounds.
Okay.
Let's start with one you probably know.
Okay.
John Mutt Lang.
Mutt Lang.
Oh,
I sure do. I've heard of him.
AC/DC. Foreigner. But here's a band he shaped sound for, Def Leppard.
Huh.
Def Leppard was not the Def Leppard you know on their first two albums.
Okay.
It was Mutt Lang that turned him into this beautiful sonic chorus.
Mm.
Savoy Brown, the Boomtown Rats, the Coors.
Yeah.
He also helped Bryan Adams.
Wow.
He co-wrote Everything I Do For You.
I did not know that.
Here's the one we're going to play, though.
Yeah.
Jukebox Hero by Foreigner.
Okay.
Foreigner was the six-person band, and they decided to get rid of two people and go to a four-person band. Well, we need to shape the sound. How can we go from this keyboard-based thing to this more guitar-based thing? Brought in Mutt Lang.
Mm.
And here was the result. Jukebox Hero from 1981. The result of a Mutt Lang studio session on Rock School.
Standing in the rain with his head hung low. Couldn't get a ticket. It was a sold out show. The scene.
What characteristics do you need to possess to be a jukebox hero?
I think you need to have a lot of people with nickels. That's what I think it is. He had a great line. I was listening to Joe Elliott talk on one of these music channels, and when they were putting together albums with Jeff Mutt Lang, he stated to the people of Def Leppard, they were doing some kind of a song, and it had a million notes, and he stopped the tape, and he looked at him, and he said, "Knock it off. You're rock stars. You want to play stadiums? Write songs that sound good in stadiums. You're not jazz artists, you're rock stars." And I thought, whoa, okay. Let's move along.
Huh?
Yeah. Let's move along to another producer, Rick Rubin. This guy, if you saw him coming down the street, you might jump to the other side. He has this humongous beard, always wears the Blues Brothers sunglasses, and he's just this huge, imposing character. He formed Def Jam Records with Russell Simmons when they were both attending NYU. Did it in a dorm room.
Huh.
You want to talk about something that turned into a whole lot of money. He's known for the mixing of hard rock and hip-hop in the 1980s.
Oh.
He's the guy that pushed Aerosmith and Run DMC together.
Walk This Way.
Right, back in 1986. Beastie Boys are one of his. Red Hot Chili Peppers, some Justin Timberlake stuff, and as I said, Metallica. Now, he's catching a lot of heck for the last Metallica album because a lot of people say there's too much compression on it.
Hmm.
What a compression does is pulls down the highs, pushes up the lows,
yeah.
And you get this almost tinny sound,
mm-hmm.
almost sibilant. See that S? That's a sibilant.
Yeah.
Almost too much of that in there. The big thing you might know Rick Rubin from is he got Johnny Cash off his couch.
Whoa.
He went to Johnny Cash and said, "Look, I've got this new label called American Recordings, and I need you to start recording again." And he set up a series of small one-person, just Johnny and a guitar concerts, and Rick Rubin produced these albums for Johnny Cash before his death, and we're going to play one of those for you now. This is called Cut You Down. Rick Rubin, What Do You Gotta Know? Stripped down. The music is what's important, not the production. They're so stripped down that oftentimes there's not even reverb on the vocals.
Hmm.
Let's take a listen. Johnny Cash from Rick Rubin, Cut You Down. Rock School.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down, tell them that God's gonna cut you down, tell them that God's gonna cut you down.
That song drove me nuts.
Why?
The first time I heard it. I wanted to play it. It's very simple to play. So I brought my guitar off the wall. I hang them on the wall. I don't keep them sitting on the ground. I hang them on the wall. Why? Because I have a 2- and a 4-year-old. And I started playing it, and I'm putting my hands in these weird positions, and I'm trying to get the notes, and I can't seem to get them. This is not right. And I go online, and I'm starting to look for the whole thing. Here, the whole guitar is tuned down a half a step.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm trying to equal it. Once I tuned it down, oh, that's it. As we talk about producers, let's move along to one that has become a punchline, and it's really too bad because when he was a producer, he was not one of the best, the best, Phil Spector.
Phil Spector, yeah, the wall of sound.
And the wall of hair. He really has become a joke. He's going away into the prison system for a very, very long time. Gold Star Studios in Los Angeles is what you'll know Phil Spector from. You'll also know him from his backing band, The Wrecking Crew. He had a group of people in Los Angeles that played all of his music, major names. If you want, go to our website. You'll find us at kslu.org. Look for the Rock School sticker there on the right-hand side. Look at the old episodes. Look for something called backing bands.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a whole big long thing on Phil Spector's Wrecking Crew. In 6 years, dig this, 12 albums, 39 charting singles, and he had at least a hand in writing most of them.
Pretty good.
And what Chad said, the wall of sound. You will know him for layering one instrument on top of another, creating this large, lush, no other way to say it, wall of sound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there is any single sound that denotes Phil Spector, it's a drum intro. Boom, 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 tsh, boom, 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 tsh, that drum intro is copied on so many songs. Billy Joel's copied it. Not Billy Joel, Liberty DeVito is his drummer, but copied so many times. Where did it come from? This one, number two from 1963. This is Be My Baby by the Ronettes. Listen to the drum intro. It's Phil Spector, and it is produced, overproduced. He's known for that on Rock School. Now, we're listening in headphones. Hopefully, you're near a good sound system. All the percussion in that, there's clapping, finger snapping. There's, obviously a drum kit. There's a tambourine. There's got to be seven or eight different instruments just creating the high-end snapping that's inside of that. And that's what Phil Spector was known for. One area of the sound, one frequency envelope, had nine things in it. I mean, it just took forever to create the sound that he wanted. Let's get one more in before we got to take a break. Do you know who Peter Asher is?
I've heard the name.
Peter Gordon. Peter and Gordon. Mm-hmm. They had a hit called A World Without Love. Paul McCartney wrote it. That was pretty much it for them. They had a couple menzas, but pretty much after A World Without Love, Peter and Gordon were done. Peter Asher went on to do some work at Apple Records, which was the Beatles' label.
Mm-hmm.
Then Peter Asher heard of this guy in California called James Taylor.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I'm going to go work with James Taylor. Quit a job, a prime job, at Apple Records, split, went out to California, and started to manage and produce James Taylor. Now, here's where it starts to get good. The James Taylor production that he did was so well done that Linda Ronstadt then hired him. Then J.D. Souther, then David Sanborn, then Bonnie Raitt, then Cher. He was then given the moniker, a Grammy, for 1977's Producer of the Year, and is generally given the moniker of having created the 1970s California sound.
Wow.
And this is the guy that started it out.
Mm.
Peter Asher, one of the known 1970s producers, and your smiling face, James Taylor on Rock School.
I see your smiling face, I have to smile myself, because I love you, yes I do.
James Taylor and your smiling face left a job at Apple. You know, you hear about that all the time. People that make the statement, you know, should I stay in this job? You know what the answer should always be?
What?
No. I'm dead serious. When somebody says, I'm thinking about leaving this, I don't know whether I should. If you got that feeling in the pit of your stomach, go.
Yeah, I guess
I really think so. We have to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the guy who was the producer for the Beatles, specifically The Edit. It's known only as The Edit. And we'll tell you about it when we come back. Who would we like to say hello to, Mr. Chad?
Rabbi KLSU in Baton Rouge, 91.1 FM.
And by all means, catch us on iTunes. I still go just to pick up the numbers about how many people are listening to us on iTunes. And you're doing it. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
Back in 1 minute, Rock School. This is Rock School as we discuss the concept of the producer. Look at the back of any album, look at the back of any CD, and it will say produced by. It may be the artist, it may not. Why didn't the Beatles produce themselves? They just didn't have the technical or the orchestral knowledge.
I guess you were going to say they just didn't have the time.
That's probably true as well. George Martin, easily the fifth Beatle. When you get into that discussion, who's the fifth Beatle? It's George Martin, the producer, the guy who did most of the orchestral arrangements and also instrumentation. The person who played a lot of the early keyboard parts for the Beatles was Martin.
Huh.
It wasn't. Some of the stuff was played by John Lennon, but a lot of the overtly difficult stuff was played by George Martin.
Mm.
He was also a producer for America. Remember Sister Golden Hair and such by America?
Yeah, yeah.
He was the producer for that. Now, let's talk about something inside of Strawberry Fields Forever just to show off how good this guy was.
Okay.
It's called The Edit.
Yeah, what is that?
remember that at this point in time, the recording technology, I guess you would say, was not up to snuff.
No.
So you couldn't go back and fix as easily as you could today. I don't want to get into bouncing and how it was done, but just keep in mind you couldn't fix it as easily as you could today. So what you had was take after take after take after take. At least 26 takes mm-hmm. were done of Strawberry Fields Forever.
Okay.
And because the voice tends to go after a while,
right, and you
try things in different tempos mm-hmm. to try and get a different shot mm-hmm. at it, not all the takes are equal.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning 55 seconds of Strawberry Fields is take 7.
Okay.
The 56, 57, 58, 59, and the 100th, pardon me, the 60th, or 1 minute, second,
uh-huh.
are all from a different part
okay.
of take 7.
Okay. Oh, okay.
The remainder from 1 minute and 1 second all the way to the end are from take 26.
Huh.
It was in a different key. It was in a different tempo.
What?
What George Martin did was using a variable speed machine and his own editing abilities, took take 7 and took take 26 and put them together. He found a way to bring the tempo and the key of take 26 equal to take 7.
Wow.
If you got a watch on you, it happens between 55 and 1 minute. When you hit 1 minute, you're in a completely different take. Listen, John Lennon will sound a little bit more mousy. So I'm going to count you down. You ready?
Yeah.
Start your timers. Starts at 55 seconds. Then you got 5 seconds of some strange, and then you're in a completely different take. 3, 2, 1.
Let me take you down.
Now, did you hear it?
I sure did.
Yep, it's
sure
difficult. If you weren't listening for it, it would just simply sound like some kind of a studio trick gone completely wrong, but it was called the edit at that point in time, marrying together take 7 and then take 24. I have no idea when the two takes were done, if mm-hmm. they were on the same day or if they were days apart. I just know it was take 7 and take 24.
And you know, we stress out about stuff like that and we hear it and we're like, oh God, I can hear it. But unless you tell somebody whenever they're listening to it,
they'd never know.
Chances are they're never going to know.
No, they would never know.
Not at all.
And it drives us crazy.
It does.
I will give these to my wife, and I know where all my screw ups are. I'll mm-hmm. give these shows, and I'll come back and I'll look at her and I say, "Well, what did you think?" And she'll go, "It was fine." Oh, didn't you hear the mistake? And she'll just put up her hand and walk away. Yeah. It's time to do something that we've become quite accustomed to at the bottom of the hour, giving our names. I'm Joe Burns.
And I'm Chad Pease.
And we also do this little thing called 7 Days in 70 Seconds, where we tell you, Green Onion, Booker T and the MGs, where we tell you something that happened on this date each day this week, which I believe is Monday, May 18th through Sunday, May 24th, way back in history, Monday. Chad.
Monday, May 18th in 1978, the film The Buddy Holly Story premiered in Dallas, Texas.
May 19th in 1958, Bobby Darin's Splish Splash is released. It'll go to number 3. You want a piece of interesting information
about Splish Splash?
It's the first single to go to number 1 that was recorded on an 8-track recording system.
Wow, it's a little blast from the past.
Yep.
May 20th was a Wednesday. May 20th, that's what I just said. 1967, the reprise label signs Mr. Jimi Hendrix.
On May 21st, 1980, Joe Strummer of The Clash is arrested at a show in Hamburg, West Germany, after smashing his guitar over the head of an audience member.
That hurts.
Yes.
May 22nd, in 1997, Fleetwood Mac reunited to perform the first of 2 MTV Unplugged specials.
May 23rd, that's a Saturday, but way back when, in 1977, the Jefferson Airplane is barred from giving a free concert at the Golden Gate Park, and they wrote the song We Built This City because of it. Why couldn't you have just let them play?
Yeah, really.
The 24th, that's a Sunday, but back in 2000, Chuck D of Public Enemy testifies before Congress about the benefits of Napster and online music distribution, and that's 7 days in 70 seconds. We're talking about producers on today's show, and this is a gentleman I've met. I worked for a radio station in Florence, Alabama called WQLT 107.3, The Q! It's still there. He, Sam Phillips, you probably know.
You met Sam Phillips?
I did. He owned the radio station. What's funny is I didn't know him well enough at the time. He came in, I shook his hand. This is the owner of the radio station, Mr. Phillips. Oh, how do you do, sir? And I didn't know him well enough at the time. Had I known, I would have been just purely sycophant. Sign this! Sign this! How is Elvis? How did you know him? I would have been terrible. But, again, Charlie Rich, Johnny Cash, B.B. King, Jerry Lee Lewis, Roy Orbison, Carl Perkins, and on and on and on.
An all-star list
Not even a question. Not even a question. And I have gone to Memphis. I have toured Sun Studios. I collect records from Sun Records. It's ridiculous anymore. What do you need to know about Sam Phillips? The two big technological advancements that he did was pulling the vocals back into the mix. It used to be that there was music and then the vocals sat on top.
Mm-hmm.
He did a rock and roll thing, pulled it back into the mix, but his massive advancement was what was known as slapback echo.
Slapback echo.
Right. Used to be that there was nothing on the voice. Mm-hmm. You got an echo by sort of opening the room and catching the echo coming back from the walls.
Okay.
He would take the voice, run it through the microphone, back into the board, and then turn that back up. Wait a minute, doesn't that feed back? Yes, but he, Sam Phillips, found a way to turn it up just enough that it would not feed back, but it would slap back. It would echo, and it gave such a neat sound that they called it slapback, and it sort of gave the, I guess, the sound of what rock and roll vocals should be.
Mm.
And that's really where Sam Phillips sort of put his touch on the way production of rock and roll should be put together.
Wow.
Blue suede shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Rock school.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. You can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoe. Well, you can knock me down, step in my face, slander my name all over the place. You can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoes.
Bang.
This is me, the producer, telling you to get your headphones on and quit enjoying that song. Got 15 seconds left.
I was just testing you. We said earlier that Peter Asher was producer of the year 1977, was known for putting together the 1970s California sound. If you were to pick a producer that came out of the 1980s, sort of the king of the 1980s, Phil Ramone would be that producer.
Oh, I was going to guess Bruce Dickinson.
No, not Bruce Dickinson. He was too cowbelly for me. Much too cowbelly for me. Phil Ramone basically got his name by recording and distributing Marilyn Monroe's rendition of Happy Birthday to You sung to President John F. Kennedy.
Hey, I know it.
Yeah. What do we know about this guy? Well, number one, there's the list. I'm pointing to it for Chad. Those are the people in the 80s.
That's too many names for me to
read. Here's just a real quick. Paul Simon, Bob Dylan, Quincy Jones, B.B. King, George Michael. Let me get the rest of them. Frank Sinatra, Rod Stewart, Billy Joel, Peter, Paul and Mary, Elton John, Madonna. Anybody who was anybody wanted Phil Ramone to produce them.
That's a who's who right there of 1980s stars.
I haven't said a quarter of the names, have I?
No.
Julian Lennon, Diane Shore, Aretha Franklin, Gloria Estefan, Natalie Cole, Chicago. This guy was the hit maker, the star maker, and when I read a little bit about him, why was he the hit maker? Well, he had his own studio, mm-hmm. so there were no time constraints. Do as you wish. But his big thing was, I want to capture you.
Mm.
I'm not trying to force you. You do it, and I will capture what you do. He was also a man who was into technical innovations. He was one of the first to have four-track studios, eight-track studios, optical sounds, digital sounds. His studio was also the first to release commercial music on compact disc.
Wow.
Now, we know Bob Seger, Bruce Springsteen's mm-hmm. Born in the USA was the first album to be put onto a CD.
Yeah.
However, the first album to be broadly released onto the medium, Billy Joel's 52nd Street, which was produced by, guess who?
Phil Ramone.
Well,
I bet his kids are not going to have any problems with their inheritance.
Oh, yeah. No trouble meeting the cable bill at the end of the month. Here's Billy. This one was done by Phil. My Life, Rock School. Missoula.
There you are.
I don't know. I don't even know what it means.
You always do that.
Little things in the middle. That's Billy Joel.
Yeah, because I think you're talking to yourself all the time.
No. I knew the microphones were open there. It's ever since that 2 or 3 show ago problem happened. I keep a real good eye on that. Now, as we were playing that song, Chad looked at me and said, "Can we get out of the 70s and 80s? Old man." And
I did not call you an old man. I called you an old fart.
Oh, hey now, with the mouth. Hello, Radio Universidad. This is the way we speak. Salamanca, Spain. Thanks for running Rock School and
KSCL. Shreveport, Louisiana, Laissez les Bontons Rouler on Rock School.
And we will be back in just a minute, and we will get the old man to play something out of the 70s and 80s. Back in a minute, Rock School. This is Rock School as we talk about producers for the remainder of the hour. Butch Vig. He is the drummer for the band Garbage. And just as actors say, "Well, I like acting, but I'd like to produce. You know, I would like to direct." Butch Vig was a drummer, and he said, "I'd like to get into producing." And he was handed in 1991 the Smashing Pumpkins' Gish, mm-hmm. and obviously did a nice job. When the record company came along and said, "We got this little nothing nobody group out of Seattle, see what you can do with them." And he said, "Okay." And the lead singer didn't have all that great of a voice, and he started playing around with him. And he said, "How about I double your voice?" And the lead singer said, "No way, man, I'm not going to do that." And he said, "John Lennon did it."
Hmm.
And the lead singer went, "Okay, I'll do it." And that little nothing group turned out to be Nirvana.
Wow. Are you serious?
Butch Vig was the producer on Nirvana's Nevermind. After that, the whole world said, "Say, would you like to produce my stuff?" And then he got Sonic Youth, AFI, Green Day, Helmet, Gumball, Jimmy Eat World.
Are you serious?
Oh,
the drummer for Garbage is responsible for the Nevermind LP.
Butch Vig, honest to goodness.
Look what you learned.
There you go.
And
Garbage came back in 1995. Shirley Manson said, "Would you like to do our self-titled?" And he said, "You bet." I'm only happy when it rains. Rock School.
I'm only happy when it rains.
Only happy when it rains.
That's right.
Garbage, Shirley Manson.
Folks, I'm going to tune you in here on a little secret about this show behind the scenes.
What's that?
We may look like big, bad radio rock stars.
We don't.
We're just dads.
Yeah,
that's
we were talking
we
about our kids. Almost missed the break talking about how our kids are not wanting to go to school. And since school's out, that's fine. We're going to talk about another group here, Bernard Edwards and Nile Rodgers. Now, Edwards is no longer with us. He died of pneumonia. But before he did, these guys were a real team. I mean, a real producing team. They were both members of Chic. Remember the song, Off We Go?
Yeah.
Yep. And they got picked up by people who wanted a more funky sound.
Okay.
Parliament Funkadelic picked them up. Ben E. King, Nancy Wilson, Aretha Franklin, Madonna.
Thought Madonna was produced by another guy.
Well, like a virgin in 1984?
Yeah.
Madonna. Duran Duran, Mick Jagger, Debbie Harry, Grace Jones, B-52s, and believe it or not, David Lee Roth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he put out an album called Your Filthy Little Mouth. Now, this one is by David Bowie. It's called Let's Dance. If you remember, David Bowie in the mid-1980s decided to go for a more hit-based, more danceable type stuff.
Yep.
So he went to these two guys, Edwards and Rodgers, and said, funk me up a little bit. And they said, okie dokie, but I still want a good guitar solo. Great. What do you say we get Stevie Ray Vaughan to play for you?
Eh.
Okay, so let's dance on Rock School.
Let's dance.
David Bowie. As we talk about producers, we have time for one more song, and I don't believe we have ever played any reggae on this show,
we? You are correct.
Lee Scratch Perry, then, will be our last producer that we talk about. And I'm just going to show, look at all the papers. I could easily do another show.
I see that.
So over the summer sometime, I think what I'll do is
clean up. You got Timbaland in there.
I do. I have him right here.
Timbaland.
And I'll bring in some other stuff and maybe put out a second show, but not next week. I've got something planned for next week, so I may put together a second show on the remainder of the people rather than just sitting here and just simply going, here are the ones we haven't played, and blurping them out.
You ever going to go on vacation?
No. No, I don't like going on vacation.
Why?
I know that sounds dumb, but I'm happy when I don't have to work and I can just sit in my house and do what I want to do.
Which is produce these shows.
Yeah. Lee Scratch Perry is this gentleman's name. He is a reggae artist, he's a dub artist, and he has been influential in the development and acceptance of reggae music in Jamaica and overseas. He didn't like the way the music was sounding. So what he did in 1973 was build a studio in his backyard. He called it the Black Ark and basically had in people he liked and tried to shape and create their sound. Junior Biles, Junior Mervin, the Heptones, the Congos, Max Romeo, and another group you may have heard of, Bob Marley, and the Wailers.
Yeah, I've heard of them once or twice.
So this is a guy that was very instrumental, at least in the 70s, with getting the sound of reggae to where we know it today. So we're going to end up with this one from Bob Marley and the Wailers. Get up, stand up. I'm Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P.
That wraps up the producers. Hey, have a nice day and a hopefully good summer in this heavy, heavy, hot Louisiana heat. Class is dismissed.
Get up, stand up for your right.